This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
And welcome to the Ashley Webster Experience alongside Brian Sullivan. Special guest in the house today, Kurt Busch. Yes, if you know anything about NASCAR, racing, revving it up, flying around those left-hand turns, you know about Kurt Busch. Of course, his brother, his younger brother, Kyle, not by much, though. And then your father was a racer too, right?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Thank you for being here so much. It's a real thrill to have you here. Let's kind of go back a little bit. Certainly racing is in your blood, right? Let's be honest. You started running, was it the Dwarf Racing back in the early days? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've done a little bit of
the
homework
cars,
on you.
Yes.
The little cars, but you did that. You did that with your dad. You were successful. It was in your blood. Did you always think you were going to be a competitive racer?
Yeah, for me, racing with my dad, it was a way of life. He raced, and we went to the track on Friday and Saturday nights. And my buddies, you know, they're out going to goof off with their cars and their girls and dirt bikes and whatever it was. And so racing to me was that hobby, but it was serious when we went.
And this was out west,
This was out west, out in Las Vegas. So, yeah, I grew up in a weird town, Las Vegas, Nevada, for racing, especially for that. And I guess, you know, it was great that I stayed out of trouble, hanging out with dad as much as I did. And he let me drive his car when I turned 16.
Big deal.
And mom checks in to see how dad did in the race. And he says, Kurt finished fifth. And she's like, oh, that's right. What do you mean Kurt finished fifth? Because she had been pushing baseball and soccer and everything else.
A little less dangerous sports.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what she thought. And the next race, I won. And me and my dad looked at each other like, oh, boy, what have we gotten into? This could get serious. And then my little brother, he came up through the racing ranks. He's 6 years younger.
Uh-huh.
But for him at age, I don't know, like age 12, he wanted to be pro. For me, by age 18, when I started to make some good traction in NASCAR and some of the lower ranks, it was still more of like, oh, maybe this will work. I don't know. But for Kyle, he's been hell-bent since early age.
But did I read somewhere you were going to go, you want to go to university, maybe look at pharmacy, get into, you know, something completely different to racing cars?
And that was, I think, to appease mom.
Oh.
She's the one that took me on a campus tour. We went to UCLA, USC, Arizona State, and then I settled at Arizona, which is down in Tucson.
Right.
And they had a nice racetrack down there. That was kind of my dad's like, yeah, I think Tucson's going to be your best option.
Great education.
Way to go, Dad. So, and take it from there. You just kind of, you look at the, you go down at the college, but that never really was for you. Explain how you got from there to the racetrack.
So mom and dad, they were hard on me with grades. I had to get good grades to be able to race. You know, that's like any father, son, mom, son situation. To have good grades, that way they'll put money in towards the car. And then with graduating high school half a year early, I got to do some work and build up some money. And dad's like, well, mom's still stuck on this college thing. Mm-hmm. And I was accepted to USC and University of Arizona. And I wanted to pursue, I don't know why, but I was looking at the pharmaceutical side of things. Yeah, I don't know.
Sounded good.
You got to get
money.
Your core classes out of the way. I didn't make it very far. With my books were literally on the back seat of my car as I was driving from race to race. I remember this is how bad I had it. It was summer of 1997, and I literally had like a 1.4 GPA, and it was. When I left college campus, I didn't realize my college campus credit card didn't work outside of the college campus. And I'm driving to L.A. for a race to meet up with this team, and I had $35 in my pocket.
Oh, God.
And it took $10 to fill up my Volkswagen Bug. So $10 well, there.
A bug. That's great.
Yeah, oh yeah. Good gas mileage.
Yeah.
$10 there, $10 back. Now I'm down to $15 and I have to eat. I literally jumped the fence at the racetrack when I got there.
Oh my God.
Because I didn't have enough money to pay for a pit pass.
Oh, wow.
I had it that bad. And from that point, it just seemed to click where school was done and the racing. This guy's car I drove next, I won the race. This next team I volunteered for, they made me a big pit crew member to help out. It just started to click after that. So I'm literally a flunk out freshman from University of Arizona that made it big in NASCAR.
But at some point, you had to go back to mom and say, Mom, you know what? I think this driving a car thing is going to be for me, and I think I can make a living at it.
I didn't think I had any problem in that because something came in the mail that showed my report card. So she already knew before
I knew. Thank God for that. So take me from there. I mean, obviously, you gain more and more experience. You know, you drive for certain crews, and the races get bigger, and your performance kind of comes along with it. I mean, you were already winning races at a young age, but you know, what was that like as your star rises?
The key thing was to position yourself for the TV races. So ESPN covered a few of our races. NBC, way back in the day in Nashville, there was that station TNN.
Yes.
Nashville Network.
I remember it well.
And they covered a few of the entry-level races. And so those were circled on the calendar first, and you had to prep to be ready for those. And if you performed well in those races, you had a better chance at being recognized.
Wow. So that's a lot of pressure.
It was. I mean, this is late 90s. You know, I bought a domain name, kurtbusch.com, to register it for myself in case I made it big time. And started to promote myself from that side of it. And then you tie in different business contacts that whether your team helped you with or my dad helped me with this guy at the gas station. Literally, I had Chevron gas from Spring Mountain Road in Las Vegas, Nevada on the side of my car for $50.
Whatever
bucks.
Works.
Yep.
Whatever. Wherever you can get your money.
And so with that, it's all about when you're trying to get to that point, it's really about how many people can support you, right? So you can pay for that, get into that next race, right?
Yes. And it's a matter of also parlaying the winnings into what you invest into for the next race and where you're going. And so every dollar I had was back towards the race car or race team. And
yeah, that's very unique because, you know, with basketball or, you know, baseball, you just go to the next game, you know, go to the next tournament until and have coaches just watch you. You have to invest in yourself and make that money work. It's very unique.
Pressure.
A quick parallel to tell a story about is the PGA, how to get there. I don't know how to get a PGA card, but you have the regional tour where you have your local course.
Yep.
Racing is very similar. You have your local track, where I grew up in Las Vegas, and then I started to travel regionally to Tucson or Phoenix, Southern California, Utah, as far east as Colorado, trying to find that next race. And there's no real set path, but you just continue to try to get recognized. And I won a race in Sonoma, which is where the NASCAR cars race.
Yeah.
It was the Saturday support race. And at that time, that's when my phone was ringing.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like people emailed me or anything. It was just my phone was ringing, and Jack Roush,
Roush Racing,
famous team owner, called me. And I go, "Is this a prank call?
Who is this?"
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And they invited me out to a tryout, and they and so that tryout, one of us five drivers, they said was going to get the ride, but you had to drive the truck. This was for the truck series. Yeah. This would be like AAA baseball now, as a comparison to Major League Baseball. And you had to do mock-up interviews. How did you work with the team?
Wow.
Your knowledge of engineering with the car.
That's a lot.
And, and it was like a full-on, one of you five is getting the ride.
And you got it?
I was able to perform the best.
Well done.
And my next race was Daytona.
Oh, my gosh.
Dead serious. From nowhere, desert, straight to Daytona.
What was that like?
Yeah, what was that like?
It was nuts. It was bananas. I mean, I'm there at the world mecca of racing.
Yeah.
Daytona, and I'm in the truck series race. And I wrecked in practice, of course.
Oh, of course.
I was too nervous. Ended up finishing second in the race.
That's impressive.
At the end. That wreck in practice helped me just kind of back it down and get into my little humble box, which I didn't stay in very often.
So eventually you get into
NASCAR proper, not the truck series, the big boys.
Yep, the top show.
The top show. And it's become, I mean, where is, for a while there, NASCAR is, it's still remarkably well followed. Hugely popular, one of the most supported sports out there. But some parts of the country don't have the same enthusiasm for it. I guess that is the way you say it. Everyone says, oh, everyone in the South. That's not true. A large part of this country loves NASCAR. How's it doing now? Is it still keep maintaining those amazing levels?
There's five different ways to look at it and 10 different ways to add up those five.
Yeah.
Here's the two categories. We have ticket sales in the grandstands, and we have TV viewership.
Mm-hmm.
TV viewership has changed over the last 5 to 6 years because the way that NASCAR sold themselves into the sports networks.
Yeah.
So we used to be primetime Fox.
Yeah.
We used to be primetime NBC.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now we're on Fox Sports 1 and we're on NBC Sports Network a lot. And that viewership is already a third.
Yeah.
Well, then when it's exposed to a 66% less people, now there's less people interested in the sport because we were tabbed with helping build the sports networks for Fox and for NBC. That's who our main contract was with. Tons of money.
Yeah.
Tons of money that NASCAR was guaranteed, tons of money that the teams were guaranteed in purse money. But now it didn't expose our sport to as many people as rapidly.
So why is it being cut back a little bit with regard to the exposure? Why is that?
It's that contract that I don't know enough to talk about within building a sports network.
Hmm.
You know, I just watched a race recently, and our race was on Fox Sports 1.
Mm-hmm.
And on that same time slot, on Fox on that same day,
mm-hmm.
was Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
On regular Fox. And that has millions of viewership over what their Fox Sports 1 channel is.
Mm.
But that's the way everything is going. I mean, Disney, ABC.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You don't have the ABC wide world of sports anymore.
That's right.
Everything is shoved to ESPN.
Yeah,
that's true. Disney owns ABC.
ESPN 1, 2.
Yeah.
They're all trying to build their sports networks with their own sport that they believe will help them move forward. And then our age 18 to 35 demographic is the largest challenge because now there's UFC.
Yes.
There's more soccer on TV. There's all these other categories that challenge NASCAR.
Mm-hmm. How do you combat that?
I think you do it with a better on-track product.
And how? What does that
racing
look like?
Racing better. Just we need to have more excitement with the cars, racing each mm-hmm. other side by side, more involvement from the manufacturers. You know, we have Chevrolet. That's who I race for.
Yep.
Ford and Toyota. We need another manufacturer that will create a better rivalry, but also somebody new as that manufacturer to help inject new technology to our sport and take it to another level. But it's with the cars racing better.
Yeah.
Our cars, they're not putting on that action-packed side-by-side sparks flying because the cars right now are too aerodynamic sensitive. And so therefore, we don't race against each other side-by-side as much. It's like,
right.
When I make a pass, I want to get clear as quick as I can.
Right.
Other driver's like, whoa,
you're saying the technology of the sport's holding it back?
The aerodynamic side of it, yes.
Really?
It's a contradictive statement,
yeah.
But yes, it we've gotten so good at making our cars handle so well that it's affected by the aero when another car is around it. We have to make the cars more comfortable when they're side by side and around each other. That way the fan, when they tune
200
in.
200 miles an hour.
Yeah. And that way, when the fans are watching, they're like, oh, yeah, that was great action between, you know, Kurt Busch and Chase Elliott. You know, when Ryan Blaney passed Bubba Wallace, it was great. You know, they need more of that.
And the personalities of the drivers, that helps to drive it, too.
Absolutely. And our new generation of drivers is more reserved.
Yes.
They're quieter.
I love the old days.
Yeah.
I mean, I screwed up plenty of thousands
of
times.
But that's okay. You.
But before me, you know, it was even better before me.
All that fire on the track, all the fights.
You had fights, but fights are okay. I totally get it. You guys are at the top of your game in a very dangerous and very competitive sport.
Yeah.
And if someone screws up, whatever it be, there's tempers are going to fly. I totally get that. It's part of the passion. If you don't have that, I don't think you have the competitive spirit that comes with it. You're all in. And when you get into fights with other drivers or you're upset, you have to let it loose, right?
Yes, you do. And now
and I know
it's
that got you in trouble,
text.
But it gets everybody in. Yes, really.
Now
but
it's a text. Hey, man, sorry I ran into you. It's like, no. I'll find you at track. We're going to look eye to eye. We're going to look eye to eye.
But no kidding. That is a big part of it. And you're not doing it for an act. I mean, you truly are very upset. You just got taken out of a race because some idiot just spun you out, right?
Absolutely.
You're going to be really upset because you have a lot invested in that race.
That's the thing.
But it all comes with the personality of the sport, the drivers, their reactions, the competitiveness. I think you're right. Some of that's been lost a little bit. It's been sanitized a little bit.
It has. And what happened, here's a story around that, is I won a race in the spring, and I'm on the cover of USA Today. And it's fabulous. You know, my sponsor, and we send it to them, and I didn't get a reply back, right? Then that same August, I'm in a beef with a driver on track, and I do something stupid, and it's on the cover of USA Today. Yeah. And my phone rings, and it's from the CEO of that sponsor. And he's like, yeah, so what's this all about? You know, we don't need these kind of headlines in the paper. You know what? This was me back then. You know what I said to him? You know, you didn't call when we won.
Fair enough.
And that's how I left it. And he goes, you don't get it, do you? And I'm like, no, apparently I don't.
Right.
That was that moment of, whoa. And that teaches you real quick as a 20-year-old athlete that you have to do the things for the sponsors and for the corporate side of it that invests millions of dollars of their brand name into our sport and into our cars. And so that's what makes it tough.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to get back to, though, is allowing these companies to still have those headlines that might not be as positive as they want, but still sometimes.
But you know what the irony is that it's kind of they're shooting themselves in the foot, because the fire and some of the maybe more negative headlines still will generate more viewership, meaning more people will see their product on your car.
Yes.
I think they're being short-sighted.
Yeah. Well, that's where I have a beautiful sponsor and the most fun right now with Monster Energy.
They love
headlines, good, bad, different. They love the energy, the excitement, and truly they want their athletes, all Monster Energy athletes, to be themselves, to not be reserved.
That's cool.
To show your true identity, and that comes across as their brand too.
So, do you think in NASCAR, you know, companies are getting too involved? Do you think so?
It has gotten to that point, and some of it has to be relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's sometimes new companies that just want to be in the sport to make a splash.
Right. Yeah.
But then my little brother has one of the most successful, longest relationships in all of NASCAR. And that's the M&M's Mars company.
Yeah. Right, right.
And the Mars family, Victoria, and the girls that run that whole campaign, they love NASCAR. But they have so many other entities that they are involved with, too, for advertising, that it's not all eggs in one basket for an M&M's Mars-style company. So that's what's hurt some of our sponsorship, is that it was so expensive that a lot of companies had all their eggs into that NASCAR basket, and if it didn't give that return on investment, that's why they might have bailed.
I think across sports, I think corporate partnerships are getting too elevated. I mean, you see basketball teams now have logos on their jerseys, just like in Europe.
Yep.
And I could see that happening. GE might say to the Celtics, you guys need to do better. We're not going to give you our sponsorship. You know, I could see as more sponsorships
But occur. I think NASCAR's probably done it way ahead of the other sports. I mean, you guys wear the old, you know, the famous
suits.
NASCAR that's got a gazillion labels on it. That was smart.
That's cool.
Great way to bring in a lot of, well, yeah, but I mean, that's what the name of the game is. You got to have money to come in to be able to do what you do. It's when the sponsors kind of take it a step too far and get into your world when they have no business being there.
When they're trying to control it from the outside. Yeah. And turn it corporate. Yeah, it's not the good old boy NASCAR grouping.
Yeah.
And that's where it tweaks it. But yeah, it's about having that logo and the time spent on TV.
Exactly.
That's simple numbers to add up.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been racing for some time now. Is this going to be your last season, do you think?
It could be, but the fun
because
I'm
you still
having,
got the power, you still got the you know, the fire.
The fire in the belly is still there, and the new team with Ganassi, it's been very surprising with how we've run, and the sponsor and the manufacturer, everybody's like, let's go again. And so I've yet to sign on the dotted line, but it's a matter of having that right feel for everything. And right now the excitement's great. We're halfway through our regular season, and I don't know.
Well.
Yeah, I don't know what next year will bring.
Just see how it goes. And part of this is that now you're kind of getting into the commentary side of things as well. And someone with your background and your knowledge, I mean, you know, you're very valuable on these broadcasts. Right. But how do you feel about being on the other side?
It's a unique challenge, a great new challenge, and a fun one, because I grew up watching NASCAR on TV.
Right.
And you would sit there and watch the race and want to learn from it. And that's where I'm sitting in this point in my career, is teaching people about NASCAR. That's been the fun part with working with Ganassi. My new team this year is a lot of new engineers coming in and looking at me as the veteran. I'm like, well, this is a different hat to wear. And so with the commentating hat. And that's where, yes, this weekend I'll be with Fox Sports 1 on the Saturday race broadcast.
But you're giving insight. You're a natural. You got a good personality, and you just be yourself.
Yeah, just
you
be
got
yourself.
You've got the knowledge. You've got the inside view of it all. I mean, it's just a natural progression, right?
I used to always fret over, pronouncing a word wrong or stumbling or saying something weird, and I'm like, you know what? Just let her rip.
Who cares?
We can hardly speak over here. Don't worry.
You guys are making me feel good about myself.
Glad we could help. Listen. That's exciting for you too, because you're getting the best of both worlds right now. Then, so you're still doing the racing and the competitiveness that comes with that, but then you get to do something fun as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice different hat to wear, but also live and current from the car, and giving that insight and bringing the fans closer to what our action is and what it takes to be successful at this top level.
Up to now, what's your greatest moment winning at Daytona? You won in what, 2017?
Yeah, two
that
years ago.
That must have been Daytona. Absolutely incredible. Describe that moment when you crossed the finish line.
I was still in this moment of when they come zooming by me, like literally, because my mirror bracket broke with about 30 laps to go. I couldn't see behind
me.
And so I had this game plan, and I had my spotter who gives me information via radio.
Yeah.
And I just thought they were going to go zooming by me on both sides. And when I got to the line, I felt this sharp, cold chill go through my whole body. And literally when I focused on what was ahead of me, there's no cars ahead of me. You see all these flash bulbs going off. It felt like everything went black and white. There's the asphalt color, and there was the wall color. Everything was black and white with all the flash bulbs going off. It was a moment that I was frozen in time that I'll remember forever.
It's almost like a slow motion moment. Like, this is it.
And I've reached that pinnacle, that top peak.
Oh, that's so cool.
How does that feel?
It was deathly quiet, and there was flash bulbs going off, and it was like a lifelong journey of winning the biggest race.
That's amazing. And of course, people screaming in your ears, the people you're in contact with.
Yeah, the team radio was going. Everybody talked at the same time, so it was just pure squelch. and so it really was a moment that matched winning the championship early in my career. Hmm. And I think when I won the championship at an early age, I didn't appreciate it as much as I did winning this Daytona championship.
Just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
Yeah. So you reflect on the teamwork and the value of it all and who put the effort in.
Right.
It's not just that one guy anymore.
Could you own a team after you're done racing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not really in my cards with personnel management, but yet, a lot of it is recruiting sponsorship and being personable to make sure there's a value in what you're creating. And that would be fun. But there's the business and the politics and the long-term contracts of it. It's something that if you start a NASCAR team, it's going to take you minimum 5 years to get to the level that you want to get to compete week in and week out.
It's a long time.
And that commitment is easily going to cost you $100 million.
Wow. $100 million. Wow.
Teams' budgets now are above $20 million a year.
Jeez.
That's in the mid-range. There's some top teams that were spending over $30
million. Wow.
That's crazy money. What's your favorite track? You've been on a lot of tracks. Do you have a favorite?
Daytona is beautiful and pageantry is that the right word? And just the experience of it. Yeah. But Bristol Motor Speedway, short track in Tennessee. I've won there 6 times. It's my favorite.
It has to be.
Because you've been winning so much.
Yeah, I've won there.
Like 150,000 people. It's just incredible. Bristol, everyone should go just once to get a sense of what NASCAR is all about. And that's, old-fashioned racing.
It's the true South. You go into Johnson City Airport, which is about an hour away, which is still 3 hours from Charlotte, 4 hours from Atlanta. You're at Tennessee Hillside, and then you come up to this stadium. You come up to this Coliseum. The grandstands are 10, 11 stories tall.
Yep.
And like you said, it seats 150,000 people.
And there's thousands more outside.
Yeah. And they set a record there a few years back for the most highly attended college football game. They put in Virginia Tech, Tennessee in the infield.
Oh, my God.
And set a record for college football.
That's amazing.
That's how big that place is.
That's crazy.
It's all the bootleggers. That's where the origin,
that.
You know?
Yeah, the moonshining that went on.
Fantastic. Yep.
That's how NASCAR was built.
Yeah.
You know, brief history is after World War II, people found this moonshine and they had to soup up their cars to outrun the law. And their fast cars, when they were out of jail, they needed to figure out what they were going to do with their fast cars. And they started racing them. And that's how NASCAR was born, was from the moonshining after World War II.
Ashley, don't you get caught on the West Side Highway every afternoon?
Occasionally, yeah. Not really bootlegging. I'm just
say, what are you running?
Trying to get home. It's called traffic in New York. That's why.
Can't go anywhere above 30 in New York.
Well, so what do you think is the future of NASCAR? Because you're pointing at, the challenges with the new TV networks and this younger generation is more reserved. What do you think the future is? Because, we've seen Jeff Gordon retire, and we've seen a lot of, the guys that are really big in the early 2000s start to lead the sport, Tony Stewart, but there's still guys like you in the sport. We're seeing a lot of great young guys. Mm-hmm. What's the future, you think?
As far as the cars themselves, that's what I always continue to harp on, which is that product on track. And it's making it more economical for the teams to stay involved, which means we need to lower the budget. And they're talking about this next Generation 7 car will be designed with possibly one supplier, such as IndyCar has a Dallara chassis. And so that chassis is your core center. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to the manufacturers to put on the front clip and the rear clip and to design the body around that. But it'll help knock down the quantity of cars that we have by going to one style chassis. We've got to make the cars look cooler. They have to be more energy efficient, which is under yellow. We should have a fuel savings device. Could be battery power, where we go to battery power to
electric
boost,
NASCAR?
To boost up just the yellow, or to have like a push to pass, an energy system that regenerates itself to give it more power based off of a battery system. And so technology is going to help us with that. And cost cutting has to be implemented, and that's done, I believe, through the manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And then there has to be some sort of system that's set up where there's a value for the ownership side that's similar to the football style setup in the NFL or NBA or Major League Baseball, where the team has a value and you're guaranteed this income based off of your past results your history.
Yeah. Well, so you've spoken a lot about the technology. How much is NASCAR the car versus the driver?
That's perfect. I love that, because when I first started, I thought you could easily give 70% of the credit to the driver, and it was less about the team. The year I won the championship, on average, we had 5 pit stops per race. Mm. Now, I would give that number, it's 40% driver.
Wow.
30% is going to be the technology that you pour in from your team's investment towards all the arms race to beat the other teams. And then you're left with more percentage on the pit crew. There's now upwards of 12 pit stops a race.
12.
Wow.
So those guys on pit road are more valuable. They're like top draft picks. You want to get that jackman from that team.
Yep, yep.
Or you want to get that tire changer from that team. Those guys have value. They're all easily getting paid 6 figures.
Seriously.
To be athletes that jump over the wall now.
Wow.
That's why it's so expensive.
And then the race strategy side of it, that's now huge, because there's certain yellow flags that match with our tire drop-off, and it's right at the 50%. It's like, now you got to have this race strategist make the calls to help have better success value.
Things have changed.
And so the driver's not necessarily along for the ride, because I still have to manage the draft. I got to help communicate with the team on the tire wear, fuel burn-off, how the car's handling. But each year I come back, it seems like there's 5% less driver
There'll
success
be robots
rate.
In there before you know
I'm
it.
Not going to say robots, but, there is now e-racing. There's electronic racing leagues and, the drones. I've seen those on TV. But NASCAR, they'll keep up with the tabs with technology and the product on track.
All right. Kurt, I know you're out of time. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Good luck with your continued racing. I know you're going to be great. And good luck behind the microphone, although, believe me, you don't need it. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
And thanks for the time today, guys.
My pleasure. All right. And thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you back here next time.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.